Warning, this podcast may contain guests that are previewing of next week's Site Village entertainment extravaganza, of which at least at this point of recording, me and T will be a part of, and Selena pending.
Wow, all in one breath as well.
I'm good now. I've nailed it all. Yep. I wish I'd called Selena P, though.
Yeah, almost.
Let's redo it.
Welcome to Seesaw Podcast
with your hosts, T, Cleves, and Selena.
Every week, bringing some much needed balance and humour to brighten up what can sometimes be a dark, disabled world.
Welcome back to Seesaw Podcast, the show that is the Site Village people of podcasts with ridiculous headwear and all.
Given that analogy,
ask me who's wearing what piece of headgear.
I feel like you're the construction worker for some reason, too.
I thought that as well, but you came into my head first.
Funny.
Okay, we're going to swiftly move on.
Just got that Bob the Builder feel about you.
Wow. So this week, as mentioned at the top of the show, we will be spotlighting the two acts who are going to be at the Site Village 30th anniversaire. That's the only French word I know.
You nailed the date as well.
Yeah, I did.
For the 30th thing. Yeah. As you'll find out going into the podcast, you don't mail most of it, either the anniversary or the dates of the actual.
I think we'll find I learned my lesson.
I'm not sure you did. Though, I'll give you that.
Yes.
Yeah, Selena will be notoriously quiet throughout because she... just to hide that cough that you had, wasn't it? You didn't want to say too much.
Exactly. I was poorly sick at the time. I didn't make those recordings. And you'll probably appreciate me not making those recordings after everyone's heard the general election podcast. Because, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Out well on that. I was suffering.
Don't worry about it. I appreciate any recordings you can't make.
We're always so loving on this show. It's good. Yeah.
I know, I don't really know how to be nice to people.
No, you never had any practice. But on elections, in the UK, tomorrow, from this recording, the 4th of July, our UK Independence Day, go and vote, providing you're registered. Or do your proxy vote, providing that you've registered and also set up your proxy vote.
Hey, I've got some half-assed quick-flying news as well.
Oh, yeah?
2 weeks ago, providing. Yeah. It was, oh God, it's so bad. It was like blind voter finds polling stations dehumanizing. Ah, no, some BBC article. Anyway.
I imagine if you knew their name as well, I'd probably have heard of them from Twitter. They're probably one of the Twitterers.
I believe it's pronounced X's.
No, that's something different.
You've X'd them.
Exercisers.
Oh, yeah, they could. Why do they not call it an exerciser?
Because Elon Musk isn't creative.
You know, when you get rid of someone from X, is it an exorcism?
Yes. But he's not smart enough to do that.
Anyway, moving on to today.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy these two interviews.
With Sydney May and Carl Morgan. We're here today with Sydney May. Welcome, Sydney. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. And the reason we have Sydney on today is they will be at the Site Village 30th anniversary evening. So, Sydney, if you just want to tell us, firstly, a little bit about yourself.
Yes, I'm registered disability sight impaired, have no sight myself, and I'll be performing some stand-up comedy at the Site Village event, which is kind of crazy, but cool.
That's the, is it 40th anniversary? So big celebration of Site Village?
30th, yeah.
30th, that's it. I'm jumping ahead a decade.
Don't age me as well with that. I'm 32, not 42.
Fantastic. So you're a comedian, a public speaker. Let's start with the comedy side of things. How do you get into comedy? Because it's quite a difficult one to get into. You've got to have a lot of cojones to go into that.
Yeah, I mean, I was a musician first. So I'm kind of no stranger to the stage. I live in Brighton. I came to Brighton 14 years ago for the music college and kind of never left. So I'm used to being on stages, but comedy was a new one. People have just been telling me for years I needed to do it. And then I did. I did a course for fun, signed up for a course in the beginning of 2020, got, I think, about 4 weeks into a six-week course, and COVID hit. So I never got to finish it. It's supposed to end with a graduation gig where everybody performs, and yeah, that never happened. So it was only about this time last year I saw an advert for another course and thought, yeah, why not? I'll sign up for that again. And that graduation gig was last November. And it's kind of, I don't know, life's just exploded since then. And I'm doing two or three open mics a week, a couple of gigs, and just enjoying it, just doing it for fun, really. And it's all just me telling stories from my life, because, as I always say, kind of stuff goes wrong when you can't see. It just does. Stuff yeah. goes wrong. Funny things happen. And that when the stuff goes wrong, I've always been of the view of kind of, you know, you make that choice whether to laugh or cry. And I've always made the choice to laugh at things. You know, people have been telling me for years I need to write a book, which maybe I will one day. Just, yeah, it's just me talking about life, basically.
Awesome. And you know, when you were a musician, I'm assuming with the guitars, you play guitar. Was it in bands, or was it like singer-songwriter yeah. things? Or
I wish I was a songwriter. No, I used to do a lot of acoustic-y stuff with guitar. Nowadays, I play bass in a band, a little signed band based down in Brighton here. We're called Torrid, A Love Affair, if you want to check us out as well. It's kind of post-grunge, noisy, melodic rock, which is all a bit of fun.
So, you know, when you were on stage with the guitar then, did you ever speak to the crowd? Did you ever have, like, funny stories to tell, or, like, crowd participation? And maybe that's what led into the comedy side of things?
No, I never really did that, actually. I guess not being the front person, the singer, I don't chat to the crowd much. But what really gave me the push was last year I joined Toastmasters, which is a public speaking club. And I really wanted to do kind of some serious public speaking, but I did that. But also people kept telling me I needed to go into stand-up comedy as well. So that gave me a push to revisit the idea that I thought about a few years ago. When I'm trying to be serious, apparently I'm not very good at it. I'm better at being funny.
Well, even the most serious talks can always benefit from a bit of comedy exactly. thrown in there, right?
Can't be you all need a bit gloom. Of dryness sometimes, or things are just too dry, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you got involved, like doing the serious stuff, like what sort of serious topics are you doing at the moment?
So I'm a life coach as well, and I'm just really passionate about talking about mindset, really. And my main point is how anyone can do anything with the right mindset, getting your mind working for you and thinking in the right way. Yeah, and I still do want to talk about that, and I need to find the time for that. But at the moment, comedy is taking a lot of my time, which is not a bad thing, but it's really fun. But yeah, there's not enough hours in the day or days in the week for all the things I want to do.
And what's it like? You said you mentioned that you were at a lot of open mics. Are they accessible for you? How is it getting to and from them? Because I imagine at first, with all the little different comedy clubs, even if it's in the local area, it's still going to be a fair bit of travelling.
Yeah, I'm lucky because I live in Brighton. There's a lot of comedy going on in Brighton. It's not a big city, but there's a lot of music and a lot of comedy. And I haven't really branched out of Brighton much. I've done one gig in London. But the thing I found about the community is it's just everyone's been really kind and accepting and really helpful, because it's one thing I like to get through my comedy is encouraging other people to laugh at it, and to make people realize it's okay to laugh at the things that I laugh at, and that includes laughing at like loss and disability. And I think it's a really important lesson. So I think if anybody is ever unsure of how to help me when I turn up at a comedy gig, I'm always kind of that's part of the comedy, and it all adds to the comedy as well. If they do something unhelpful or wrong, it all adds to it.
We speak on the podcast sometimes about disabled people having a bit of an image issue, in the sense that you know, they get a bit angry or disagreeable about people that don't know about them. But we've always said, similar to yourself, that if you make people feel comfortable around that sort of thing, then they feel comfortable as well, and it just becomes less of an issue over time. So I think
it takes a lot. It really takes a lot to make me angry, unless someone is actually, you know, unkind or nasty about something. People get things wrong because they don't understand. And 9 times out of 10, when people get things wrong, it's still well-intentioned. And I just refuse to spend my life angry about it. And yeah, like I say, I choose to laugh at things and also kind of teach people what is right if they get things wrong. I'd much rather help somebody else understand than get angry with them.
It's the best attitude to take. So how did Site Village come about?
I was going to be there anyway. So I work for Thomas Pocklington Trust in my day job. I work in technology. So I was already scheduled to be there representing TPT during the day. And it was actually a friend tagged me in a post on Facebook about the evening entertainment and that they were looking for kind of blind and partially sighted talent. So I replied to that. I sent them, there's a YouTube video of my debut gig out there. And they liked it, and here we are. It's going to be my kind of first properly paid gig, which is pretty exciting.
That's great. That's great validation, isn't it?
It is, and they've asked me to do 45 minutes, which is kind of terrifying because the longest I've done is 10 so far. So I'm busily writing and putting stuff together. I think it'll be fine.
It might be a surprise to
all of us how it comes out.
Will that be like one sort of 45 minute set, or is that like? Are you sort of comparing the evening as well? Like, I don't know how it's going to go. I'm not sure what.
No, I have no idea. I haven't been asked to compare, so I presume it's just one set. To be honest, we've been given the go ahead. They've said this is happening. That's all I know at this point. I haven't heard from them since, actually. So yeah, I think they're still maybe putting the evening together. I don't know. I'm just going to turn up and do what I do. I'm not a worrier. I tend to just kind of turn up and see how things go. Yeah, what will be will be.
Nice. We actually, like last year, myself and T and Selena actually were at Site Village as well. We did actually interview someone from Thomas Pocklington as well, but it's a year ago now. I can't remember exactly where it was. But we did go around a fair few of the vendors actually to put episodes together. So we're going to be doing a similar thing. Yeah. We're a similar thing. We've got tickets to the evening as well. So we're coming to watch you.
I don't even know how many people are there, like how many tickets they're selling or anything like that. No idea.
No, me neither. I mean, when I originally got the tickets, it was quite vague. And then I found the organisers and they sort of mentioned that yourself and this Carl as well and some there's the other acts and a bit more of the actual agenda of the evening anyway. So I think a bit more of that's out there now. So that would be great.
Oh, okay. You might know more about it than I do. I don't know.
I'm hoping as well, by the time this episode comes out, it should be pretty much set in stone. And by this point as well, you should... Well, have you set together and be ready to go? You're looking forward to it?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. It'll be, and I think there might be a few people I know there, which would be a little bit more pressure, but also nice. So yeah, hopefully it's going to be really fun.
So just before we go then, just before we wrap things up, do you want to just give us your social handles and where people can find you?
Yep, so I'm mostly on Instagram and Facebook. And YouTube as well. The best way to find me is at Syd May Coach. So that's SYDMAYCOACH. And I make a joke about the fact that my name is Sydney with a Y in the middle, like the city. Just no eyes by name and no eyes by nature. That's my opener. I've ruined that for you now. But helps you remember how to spell my name, at least.
Love it. And if you are going to be at Site Village this year, on the 7th and 8th of July. No, 8th and 9th of July. then come along. There's still tickets for the evening. Come see Sydney, and it's going to be a great event. And we'll be there covering it all. So come along and say hello to all of us, and have a great time.
And we'll see you then. Thanks, Sydney. Today we have Carl Morgan, musician and musical therapist. How are you doing, Carl?
Hello. Nice to be on the podcast, and thank you for inviting me.
No problem at all. If you just want to start by telling the listeners a little bit about yourself, then.
Yes, I've been playing the guitar and the piano. Really, the guitar since the last 2 years of school, and which was about 1980, I started playing guitar. I also sing with the guitar and the piano, and I play a mixture of songs from the 1950s and 60s upwards to the 1990s and 2000s. When I left school, there wasn't many jobs, as you know, for blind people, especially in the early 80s. So I worked as a telephonist for 2 years and didn't like that. tried the piano tuning out, didn't really get on with that. And then I knew then, after leaving RNC, that I really wanted to try and make a go at the music business, even though it's a very hard business to get into. So I had no qualifications, just a few CSEs. And it's quite a nice story, actually, a chance meeting. I phoned around a couple of colleges, went for some interviews to do A-level music, didn't get into any of them. And then phoned a lady at a college in Coventry, and she said, oh, are you?
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make high-quality clothing for a summer wardrobe you'll love, all made right here in the USA. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Lost my sight when I was younger. I'd like to try and help blind people, you know, a blind person like yourself, if I can.
Yeah.
And so she said, come along to see me, and if we think your practical skills are good enough, we'll consider taking you on. So I went along to see her. She said, yes, your practical skills are good enough to get on the college course, but you've got no qualifications and little theory knowledge. So come to me for 6 months, and then I'll get you on, talk to the headmaster and get you onto the college course, so, which is what I did. So I was just in the right place at the right time, and I did the usual classical training, because I only played some pop material really on the guitar, just basic chords and singing. So I got grade 8 classical guitar and grade 7 piano and grade 7 singing.
What's your sight condition, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, sure. The optic nerve has not developed. So it's to do with the optic nerve. I used to have some sight up until my 20s, but it's been a gradual deterioration as the years have gone on. So now I really only have light and dark.
So if we go back to the music then, where did you go from college then? Because have you been doing this a while now?
Yeah, that was in the 1990s. I then did a bit of teaching of guitar for a couple of years, and then went to do a degree in drama music. And after obtaining that, I left that, worked in Bournemouth for a bit in the hotels and bar and pubs. And then went to Cyprus from 2009 to 2011, playing in bars. Not really very knowledgeable about the setup here in Cyprus. So I learned a lot about the way things were done musically here in Cyprus. After that, I went back to the UK in 2012 to do a master's degree in music therapy. And that's really my CV in a nutshell.
Incredible. And yeah, before we started recording here, you mentioned that you're out in Cyprus right now.
Yes. The main reason I'm here is I have a masonette in Bristol where I live in England, but I've now bought an apartment in Cyprus and moved in April. So I'm now doing some work in the bars and just playing guitar and singing, really. Starting with guitar and backing tracks.
Cyprus is a big move. How did you decide on Cyprus?
Basically, I decided to buy an apartment here, A, because I'd lived here before. I didn't have a lot of money at the time in 2009, so I only rented an apartment. I've been very lucky, having very supportive parents. So in 2009, my father came over with me for a month to get me set up, if you like, and to make sure I was established. And when we did that, we did a little bit of marketing. He helped me obtain a property over in Cyprus to rent. And so the reason I've gone back is because obviously I know the country. I know the way they work here. I suppose I've been lucky in some ways because I've researched it well. So in terms of research, I managed to get an English estate agent and an English lawyer. And I think that's really important for anybody if they want to move abroad, not just if they're blind. I think it's just important for anybody to do that. Yeah, I mean, it was a big move, but fortunately for me, it's worked out. And I've had some friends here before from 2011 when I worked here.
And do you find it's different in Cyprus to England from a musical standpoint, if, you know, when you play in bars and things like that in Cyprus versus bars in England?
I think this is one of the major things I've learned when I played in 2009 to 2011. If the Cyprians, if the bars are full, they love you. If you're getting people going, they love you. If there's not many people in the bar, then they'll just get rid of you. And I think probably that goes for everywhere, but I think the motto behind it really is to keep your act fresh and have new material. And particularly when you're playing to holidaymakers, keep the music lively. The Cyprians like the music lively. And I think that's the mistake I made the last time when I was there. And now I've been here for nearly 3 months. And fortunately, I've kept the same work in the same bar since April. So I've learned from my mistakes in the past, I think. And I think that's a valuable lesson for us all to learn.
Absolutely. It sounds like a bit of a cutthroat situation you're in then, over there in Cyprus.
It is, but the music business as a whole is a cutthroat situation anyway. Yeah. I mean, if a solo entertainer is going to entertain, these days, just playing the guitar without the backings doesn't really work, particularly if you're in a pub or a hotel. People need to be able to dance to the music, and they need a good variety. So you need a variety of songs to take you from, if you're playing in hotels, really, from the 60s right through to the present day. I don't play an awful lot of the present day, just a few Ed Sheeran songs and so forth. But at least if you can select a few songs from the present day. And people, of course, like the classic songs like Amarilla, American Pie, and of course some Beatles as well.
Some big sing-alongs then for like holidaymakers.
Yeah, I think so. I think this is what they like, you know. And you yourself, when you've been on holiday, you've probably, when you've been abroad or in England, you've probably heard entertainers just to sing along, maybe that you wouldn't put on in your house at night time if you were relaxing with a beer listening to some music. But sing-alongs, if you're in a crowd, it's different. Like Sweet Caroline, for example. Crowd pleasers, if you like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you as well a little bit. You mentioned musical therapy. What does that sort of entail?
Well, according to the RNIB, I'm the first blind person to have done a master's degree in music therapy, and this is mainly because of the visual aspect. The RNIB did not, in the past, encourage too many blind people to go into this profession, as I said, because of the visual aspect, i.e. eye contact, facial expression, etc. So I overcome this problem by working with, I have on access to work. I work with an assistant who's a trainee music therapist, and she informs me through her own improvisation. So we musically improvise together. So she might sing to me, "Johnny's smiling," or "Mary is laughing," because sometimes some of them can't actually talk, you know, yeah. Or "Mary is looking at you." But she'll say that within her own musical improvisation instead of just saying it to me, which is why it's very important to have a trainee music therapist, because they're a musician as well and they can improvise with you. So music therapy can help a lot of people with learning difficulties, dementia, and various amounts of illnesses, such as cancer, etc. And I work with people with learning difficulties who, if they can't talk because of their disability, they can't talk to you and I like we can. So they need an avenue of expression. They might not be able to express how they feel. They might be angry one day, or they might be sad. So they can express and use music to express those emotions, which is really important, especially if you're nonverbal. And then with people with dementia, of course, I might have a group of about 8 or 10 of them, and I'll show them a picture of Elvis, play a song of Elvis Presley, and then that starts off conversations in the group, and it brings back valuable memories. It's not a cure, but it brings back valuable memories. Also, I work with people with strokes, and one particular lady I've worked with who's had a stroke in her late 50s, she's incapacitated, bedbound, and I worked with her for 2 years, and I sung one particular song to her, and then I slowed it down and just broke the song up and then left pauses in the middle of the song, and then she actually used her voice for the first time in 2 years, wow, quietly, but she whispered some of the words of the song to me. Wow. So though it's not a cure, it can liven up some of those senses.
Yeah, it sounds so rewarding.
Yeah, and by the way, I would recommend any blind person, after I've done the course, it's not going to be easy. There's a lot of theory work involved, but I would certainly recommend that any blind person could do the course.
Great.
And with that bit of help and support from an assistant, they can definitely, it is definitely possible for a visually impaired person to do this course. So it's another avenue for a career for them.
Absolutely. And like Cleve said, it's such valuable and like rewarding work. And anyone who's anyone knows how powerful music is. Like if you hear the wrong song at the wrong time, it can put you in a bad mood for the day, or you can be in a bad mood. We wake up, put on a good song or hear something on the radio, and immediately you pick up. So such an emotional response for anyone, from depending on what the song is.
And it brings back a lot of emotions as well. It can bring back emotions of past relationships, but it can also make you feel very happy inside. You know, put on a happy song, it makes you feel jolly. And sometimes, you know, you just want to get up and dance if you've got a good song that you like. But this depends on the time of day.
Well, speaking of getting up,
if you've had a few... Yes, sorry?
I was saying, if you've had a few beers, I was saying, speaking of getting up and dancing, you are soon to be playing Sight Village in Birmingham, am I right?
That's right.
Are you looking forward to it? How did that come about?
The lady who was in charge of the marketing actually found me on YouTube. So she found my videos there and then emailed me. I emailed her back and spoke to her on the phone, and it just went from there, really. Just talked to her about the age of the people who might be expecting to attend. But of course, as knowing, being at Sight Village myself in the past, there's going to be a wide range of people.
Yeah.
A wide range of ages.
And have you started to build a set around that, thinking it might be some past, present, and a little bit of in between?
Yes, I have actually. Yeah, I've been thinking about that and how to sort of structure that. Not entirely, because I never always plan it absolutely for every song, but she's told me about the seating arrangements and about the size of the room, which obviously is important, and the age range as well. So because there's going to be quite a few people in their 20s, I'll need to do one or two up-to-date songs, maybe, sprinkled with some 80s songs, Stevie Wonder, yeah, Billy Joel, and because there's obviously be some older people, I can put some 60s in as well.
Okay, well, I'm going to finish it off there. Thank you very much for coming to speak to us, Cole, and we will most likely come and see you at Sight Village and say hello.
Yeah, and once again, many thanks for inviting me.
No problem.
Been a pleasure, Cole. Been an absolute pleasure.
Now, usually Selena does the back thing.
Okay. Right. We're back. I think they're going to be really cool to see at Site Village.
Based on the fact that you weren't there for either interview?
Yep, and I've not pre-listened to anything. However, I have faith in our ability to get good guests on the show. So therefore, by that logic, it's going to be good and you don't want to miss it.
That's actually quite good, and I would agree with that logic had they not just heard two interviews. But yeah,
yep.
Go watch Sydney, go watch Carl. I'm sure there'll be a little bit there for everyone.
Yep.
And we'll see you next week, where we'll most likely be airing one of our classic series, because I'm not going to have time to edit a full podcast between then and like the next day after Site Village. But then we will cover it as we did last year in all of its glory. And we will see you then.
Yep. Come to Site Village. 8th of July.
Thank you for listening to Seesaw Podcast. Your feedback and comments mean a lot to us. So if you'd like to get in touch, you can do so in the following ways.
You can find us on X at Seesaw Pod, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at Seesaw Podcast. You can email us at seesawpodcast@gmail.com. And you can stream with us live every week on Twitch at Seesaw Podcast.
Remember to like, rate, review, and share with a friend.
This podcast was recorded in front of a blind audience.